And we're listening to stories of people who have had lousy things happen to them, and what was their journey? What did they bring back?
I guess any story that involves real adversity carries a very strong obligation with it on the teller. I think for most people, we really want to empathize, but it's hard to empathize if they don't seem really positive and hopeful. It's a bit like the old saying about the only person who can get a bank loan is the guy who can prove he doesn't need the loan. We sort of want people to prove how gutsy and courageous and cheerful they are before we're quite willing to connect with their pain. They have to give us hope. And they can't overstay their empathy. So telling people these stories, I think, is risky.
But I think that we do tell our stories for a reason. And these stories evolve in the telling. I don't mean they become a patchwork of lies. I mean that the story is a process of trying to work out, to find out the meaning of what the experience was about. And that does take a long time sometimes, and every telling is a searching.
It is kind of funny that in this circle of people talking about their traumas, when it came my turn, I chose to talk about the psychological and existential and financial challenge of our move to the West Coast a few years back, instead of the bizarre physical problem that really threatened our coherent existence 30 years ago. We'll tell that someday. But maybe that's transitioned for me into just a story you tell at parties, and I'm right back to my 20-year-old's belief that I'm totally indestructible.
Here are three more stories.
I had rheumatoid arthritis for 2.5 years, and was taking prednisone for the last year and a half. And I was a chiropractor for 25 years, and for many years I wanted to make the transition out of it. And I thought the arthritis would do this, and then I had the stroke, and lo and behold, I'm out of it now. And, it was always, maybe this year I'll leave, but I couldn't quite make the transition. And then it was forced upon me. Yeah. And I'm beginning a transition to full-time writing and teaching, but that'll happen in time. It's been an interesting journey. Initially, with the first stroke, I just woke, had a couple of fluttering TIAs. TIAs are transient ischemic attacks, loss of speech and so on. And then the next night, the same thing again. And then I woke at 3 o'clock in the morning with my arm completely paralyzed, and it took the whole day for it to come back. The second time, it was largely like the first. And the third time it was a weird situation because I was in the hospital and I didn't pass out, but I went from bad to worse. The main thing I noticed was having to, I could perceive everything coming in, but when I searched for words, and it was difficult, in some ways I've had to learn to rethink myself. A stroke is a strange disease. It's because it really cripples the brain function temporarily. At my worst, I felt like I couldn't think. I just survived just inch by inch through the day, and then learning to do everything again. Getting dressed, it affects probably everything because it's, I can't use the right hand, so I do everything left-handed, which I'm not used to. Plus, it's complicated by the arthritis, which has been kicking back in. And both hands hurt, so I'm in pain a lot, but I'm used to living with that. I saw the neurovascular surgeon about 2 weeks ago, and she said that barring any other strokes, she should make a good recovery, but never knowing whether one is going to have another stroke or not, as the time goes by, the thought recedes from my mind, but I'm always, somewhere in the back of my mind. I guess it's shown me appreciation for life, and whatever I want to do, I better get on with it. I have a manuscript which my publisher is interested in, which he wanted a much shorter book, and I was doing that while I was recovering from the third stroke. and I finished it about a month ago. But writing, of course, was extremely difficult when one-handed, and I had to search for the letters, whereas I used to be a touch typist. But it was definitely hard to think, but probably good in terms of my writing, because it slowed me down and kind of I really had to focus. It's about enlightenment, actually. It's called Everyday Mastery, and the teaching is that we're not our story. We're not this person we take ourselves to be. And so what was interesting was that I had a stroke, and none of my deepest inner experience changed. Nothing touches it, whether it's, you know, stroke or rheumatoid arthritis or whatever. So that my fundamental well-being, it doesn't depend on circumstances. But the stroke, nevertheless, is, you know, wow, this has been interesting. You know, why did I create this? And but not with any self-condemnation or at all. I just the fact is, it's created, and I've had it, and I've better learned to live with it, and so I do.
I do architectural drafting and design in one way or the other more than 25 years. Well, in 1968, I dislocated my left shoulder, and in the next year and a half, I dislocated it 7 more times, and then had surgery, and then had many years of a very painful experience with it not being quite right, and overusing it, and just kind of not being able to recover. I was doing remodeling in San Francisco. I was basically a carpenter, electrician, plumber kind of guy. Well, I went to the hospital, and they put it back in, and they wrapped it with a soft cast for several weeks after the first time, and after the third time, a similar treatment. And then eventually, many of the dislocations happened in my sleep. So I'd wake up in the middle of the night screaming, and I finally had to resort to tying my wrist to a cord and then the other end of the cord to my leg so I couldn't raise my arm. And then slowly over time, you realize, oh, this is a major life-changing injury that you have no clue, really, as to how to cope with. And you just kind of make it up as you go. But what happened is that I started doing things, I did manual labor in the building trades, and I used it too much too soon after surgery. And as a result, it became quite painful, and I had to wrap it against my body for many months, and then wore it in a sling for about 5 years. At the time, back then, you know, physical therapy wasn't very far advanced, and I didn't have any after surgery. It was totally new. I was very angry about it for quite a long time and frustrated because I didn't know what to do. I tried this and that and everything. Gosh, acupuncture, you know, pain medicine. Well, you know, the pain medicine helps some, but who wants to live with that all the time? Exercises, trying to strengthen it, but then I would perhaps go a little too far, and then I would set it back. So it's like there's a razor's edge there that you can't see in front of you. You know it's there, but you can't see it because it has a way of moving depending on what the body's doing at that time. I started doing everything with my right arm, because I didn't know how to, I didn't have another way to support myself at the time. So that resulted in the right side of my body becoming very strong and the left side of my body atrophying. I mean, visibly, noticeably, dramatically different, the two sides. So that ended up creating problems in my back. Yeah, I guess I got some karma to work off. Huh? In all the years that it was, the shoulder was painful, I had to understand each move that I made as to whether or not it would aggravate it and make a choice. Okay, do I lift my arm to get that item off of the shelf, or do I put what I have in my right hand down so that I can then reach it with my right hand. So, you know, every moment of motion with my arms or my legs, I have to pay attention in order to not aggravate it. Yet at the same time, I can't underuse it because then it atrophies. It's been quite a journey. And I think the way that it's changed me the most is that, when I was a young man, when the shoulder problems first came to me, I discovered that I was quite an angry young man. And I was very angry about the shoulder, of course, but I also understood that there was a lot of anger about other things. And I think that in the course of dealing with it, a lot of that anger got burned off. So I don't feel that way anymore. Although there's frustration and there's a sense of loss and a grieving for lost potential of those years. So it's mellowed me and it's made me more patient, much more compassionate for other people's limitations and pain and what they've gone through. And my disability is mild compared to many people's disability. And so I'm thankful for that. Yet at the same time, I can really identify with someone who's lost a leg or something like that. So it softens you. It humbles you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It hurts. Nothing funny about hurt.
My health was up and down. I'd begun to put a lot of weight on. I got up to about 240 pounds, and right now I weigh around 150. And being 6 feet tall, 150 is a little skinny. But 240 was much. I was the last person to play Santa Claus at Hink's department store at Berkeley before it closed up. When I really lost a lot of the weight, I had gotten down to about 114 pounds before I was diagnosed. So someone 6 feet tall at 114, I looked like I had just gotten out of Auschwitz. I kind of feel that when we're in those early 20s, we're still immortal, or we don't quite realize our own mortality. So going through that process really brought that home to me. Having the onset of diabetes at about 25. You know, I'd gotten to go out and party too much. And then to be told that I had to curtail that kind of activity, I didn't. That was the problem. I didn't. It took quite a number of years to sort of kick myself in the head and say, you know, coming to terms more with what did I really want out of my life. Diabetes has affected every aspect of it, from, you know, sexual function to just the food choices that I would make. Giving up drinking was really the harder one because I've always enjoyed it so much. But at a certain point, it had such an immediate effect on my health. Having a couple of experiences, like sort of having the daylight scared out of you once or twice is a good incentive to take care of yourself. But I think what was really worse was a few years back when my partner was on vacation in Hawaii and I had gone into high blood sugar and I wound up in the hospital in a coma for 4 days. So I think I've just had to suffer with a couple of setbacks in order to get the point across to myself that that was not the way that I wanted to live. Partly related to the diabetes, poor circulation, but also childhood injuries. The tarsals of my right foot started to disintegrate. And it was gotten to a point where it was just so painful. It was like walking on chalk rollers. Or, you know, having some old fart squeeze your hand a little too hard and roll your knuckles. Well, it was kind of like that in my foot. And I asked my bone doctor, you know, how long before I'm going to lose this foot. And he thought it was 1 to 5 years. And I felt like I should make the choice now, whether to deal with this now or later. And I felt that I came from a much stronger position to have the foot amputated by my choice at my time in choosing. Not that there's a convenient time to lose a limb, but, you know, to make the decision myself rather than let the world or life thrust it upon me gave me a much more powerful place to deal with it. I don't really know that I had a lot of difficulty making the decision. And I'm sure I entertained myself with the idea of, you know, making interesting footprints in the sand. One foot, one peg, one foot, one peg. But really the prosthetic is pretty close to having a foot in place. It works much better ankle-wise than my own ankle did for a couple of years. It's just kind of like wearing a real heavy work boot on one leg. When I raised my leg, I was lying in bed, and I raised my leg up and put the end of it down on the bed, and it was kind of like, you know, if you put your feet up on the bed or you raise your knees while you're lying down, we take for granted where it's going to stop, when, you know, where the motion is going to stop. Well, the motion didn't stop in the same place. It stopped at about half that distance again because my leg had been cut mid-calf. So when I drew my knees up and then put my foot back down, well, this one just sort of sank a little farther. So I was amused with little things like that, just watching it cross through my mind. So like I said, you know, I have succumbed to bouts of depression, and when I've allowed myself to sink into that quagmire, it just takes, you know, so much more effort to climb out of it. At this time in my life, I just try not to get too mired down to start with, so that I don't have to apply so much effort to climb out of it. Beekeeping has been one of my life loves. I learned about it from a neighbor when I was about 10, and an old man who was a furniture repairer who lived across the street from us as I grew up. I had 3 or 4 hives in the city. And so, you know, for a 10-year-old kid, that was great stuff to explore and learn about the little mystery of what goes on inside those wooden boxes that we don't see. I can do the work from my wheelchair even. A little more struggle than having 2 feet under you, but still doable. And not requiring a lot of deadlines, so that if there was a problem with my health or some fluctuation in it, the beehives weren't going to suffer because I didn't happen to harvest that year or that week. They don't care. In fact, they prefer to be left alone. You know, leave us be.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.